All right, another episode of Confessions of a Street Broker. This is going to be really cool. Longtime competitor, but friend of mine. Got Adam Graham here, Principal Lee and Associates.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, this is going to be good, man. I'm excited about this. So Adam's worked Stemmons Corridor for, I don't know, God, you've probably been doing it.
Turns out it's been 20 years.
20 year. Years.
Yeah.
20 tours of duty.
I know. I still don't have like my house in Colorado yet. Guess I got another couple of years to go.
Oh man. Well, you know, we crossed paths when I started in Brook Hollow. You're working a lot in Brook Hollow. You know, we always showed up on trying to tenant rep people to, you know, competing and all that stuff, but always had a great relationship. We always worked a lot of deals together, and so it's always been a pleasure working with you. So I'm excited for everybody to kind of hear your story and everything. So, well, let's just get into it. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
So I am from East Texas. Grew up in Longview.
Okay.
Actually went to a really small school. Graduated with 19 people.
Oh wow!
And then went
tiny.
That is tiny, yeah. And it's kind of one of those, you know, it's a lot different from living in Dallas now. And my kids are going to a private school, but you know, you actually have to apply to go interview. In Longview, you either went there when you were young, or when you got kicked out of public school, that's where you ended up. And all you had to do is just just tell them you wanted to go, and they said, please, we need more people.
Yeah.
a little different ball game. Yeah. But yeah, so went to a small school, graduated, went down to Austin, UT, went completely opposite side, went to one of the largest universities. So
yeah,
kind of went to class with 19 people and then went to class with a school that was as big as my hometown.
So what drew you to UT? What,
you know, our family, just a lot of folks in our family grew up watching UT football.
Yeah.
You know, loved the city of Austin at the time. Was always going to kind of stay in Texas. I think, looking back, I think I applied to Texas and I applied to Tech. That was my backup, and I really had no interest going anywhere.
Tech is always the backup. We take all your forgotten all those things. So all the people that don't get an A&M or Texas, we'll take you.
So there, you know, there's a. If I applied today, I don't think I'd get into Texas anymore.
It's like top 6% now.
Yeah.
To get in.
Yeah.
It's nuts. You know. A lot tougher school. So what did your parents do in Longview?
So mom was a school teacher, and my dad, and he was always in real estate, really built homes.
Okay.
So that was, you know, high school jobs was construction, cleanup.
Yep.
Now, later in life, he does a lot more brokerage, always did development, but always kind of in small towns. So yep. Always been around that. Yeah.
That's cool. So you got real estate right out the gate.
A little bit in some form or fashion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you own a couple properties yourself, so you know what has to do be done, what it takes to get manage it, and when the tenant leaves you a bunch of pile of crap to clean up,
that's
you're
right.
Like, oh, this is like cleaning up a job site.
Have no problem mowing grass.
So, all right. So you go to UT and what did you major in at UT?
Economics.
Economics. Okay.
By default.
By default.
They wouldn't let me in the business school.
Oh, well.
And you know, it's crazy because looking back, you know, I really actually kind of like that major, but you know, you're undergraduate college, you're in Austin, you're having fun, you're learning a little bit. And there's something to be said for, you know, college almost needs to be 2 years more, or you just go back and get your master's, which I did. And I kind of wish I'd done that too. Cause after school, you go work, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And once you go into the real world, it's like, man, I kind of want to go back for 2 more years and pay attention just a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought, I mean, like, you know, for me, my grades weren't very good. Like when I was playing football, my grades were atrocious.
You had a lot going on.
Like terrible. When I was done, they started going up a lot. And then now I look back and kind of go, man, like, I wish I kind of would have like studied. Yeah, I mean, think how much better you could do in college. Like, you feel like I could go in and get a 4.0 right now, I feel like, right?
That's right.
You know, and so.
And it's not like, you know, what we do, it's not like we're going to get a higher paying salary because we don't have salaries.
No.
But it just gives you a good, you know, balance and just, you know, I have friends, I have clients that, you know, are accounting based guys. They work for some of the big firms. Now they're asset managers or acquisition guys. Well, we can all get to the same you know, the same number,
yeah,
but they do it so much faster. It's like, yeah, hang on, wait a minute. I mean, okay, yeah. I see how you did that. It's just, I'm like on a 5 second delay of just how their minds work.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. It's, you know, I thought about like, oh, maybe I should get my CFA. That would like look good. And I'm like, but does it really matter? Like, all I need to do is find a good deal. No one's going to care if I have a CFA or not.
That's right.
A good deal to buy.
That's right. That's right.
So, but yeah, no, it's, you know, now being a lot more on the principal side of things, I deal with, you know, some of my equity partners have asset management teams and I deal with them and I'm all like one of my deal guys for one of our equity partners, he's a CFA. So like, he like runs through numbers real quick and I'm like, like to your point, like, I'm like, oh, I'm only 30 seconds behind you, but yes, you're right.
But that's okay. I mean, that's why you have those guys just kind of, you know,
sure,
on your board. That's why you have them, you know, on your team. Is I'm kind of the deal guy. I'm great at digging stuff up.
Yeah.
It's kind of like verify.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good deal. Okay, great. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's what's been really, you know, in the side of the house I'm on now is like, you know, people a lot of the times are like, oh, don't ever take on JV equity partners, syndicate as much as you can forever. You know, I'm like, that's great. But like now it's nice to be like back tested. And in a way it's actually raised me more money. I got one guy that was always on the fence of doing certain deals with me. And then when he met one of my JV partners, he's like, give me 10% of everything they do.
Huh.
So it's like, he goes, I just look at it like, I really like you. I like what you're doing, but I also know they've back tested everything you've sent them and they're in too. So it's kind of like a safety valve, yeah. You know? So yeah, so that's been nice. So like, I don't, you know, Will writes it up. You know, we got a new analyst now. He's writing it up. They send it off. Those guys agree. So it takes some stress off of me. Okay, I think we're right, you know? So, but, all right. So you're at Texas. Get your economics degree. Did you graduate in 4?
I did.
Okay.
I kind of regret that a little bit too, because I have photos from that graduation and it's me and 5 friends, but they're all girls. All my guy buddies took that extra, you know, football season. Yeah. And, you know, job market wasn't great. It's like, you know, I don't know why I was just itching. I was really kind of itching to get out of college and go to work.
Yeah.
Which is, as it turns out these days, it's hard to find kids that want to do that.
You're right.
It's completely different now. But yeah, I was ready to get out. I kind of had already zeroed in moving back to Dallas, just didn't want to go all the way back home, but just, it was central.
Yeah.
I was still close to home, but bigger city. And yeah, I wanted to get going on my career, but, again, yeah, everyone else, all my buddies stayed back for at least a semester. Some took an extra full year, but, yeah. That's where I was. That's what I was cool. ready to do.
No. I was out in 4 and, I get in the real world and I was kind of like, oh, this is cool. I was doing music. So I was like, I didn't really want to have a job, but I had to go get a job. And I was like, I don't like this. I kind of wish I would have just had another 4 year school too, right?
I will never forget that first summer. So I started working at Bradford 2004 and it was right around February because I kind of wrapped up that summer before and it took a while to find my first job. No one was hiring.
Yeah.
I mean, I've interviewed with no less than 40 different folks.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know what happened to it years ago, but I used to have a stack of business cards, just everyone I met with. They'd give me 3 more people to go talk to. So by the time I actually got a job, I knew quite a few folks because I talked to everyone, but it was like, we're just really not hiring right now, but call these 3 guys. Finally got in that first summer, you know, you're suited up,
yep,
driving around, it's hot. And I'll never forget being at a stoplight and seeing some kids that were, you know, my age, maybe slightly younger, in a Jeep, bathing suits on, obviously heading to the pool, the lake or something where I'm sweating, I'm out making cold calls like, this sucks.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Man, that's what I remember one summer I was making cold calls. You know, fully suited and booted. And it's like, I look in my dash and it says like the internal temperature of my car was like 123. And I was like, this sucks. Yeah. I mean, you get out, make one call. The worst than 2 if you tour. Like touring was like, oh God.
Sweating it out in those boxes.
You might as well have another shirt in the car at that point. So you get out of Texas, you go interview with all these schools. What made you think you wanted to go into commercial real estate?
You know, I don't, I knew I wanted to do something real estate related, and I probably didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. Brokerage is kind of the entrance into probably all the above.
Yeah.
And there were some older guys at UT that, you know, had gone off and felt like, all right, you know, this is something I want to do. Don't want to sit at a desk every day. Seems like the guys who, you know, had been in a couple of years were making good money. So it was a couple of things that just really revolved around, you know, wanting to make good money and not have to sit behind a desk, being out and about, you know,
right,
having different things to do in a given day.
Yeah. And so you get hired at Bradford, and did you immediately start working on industrial at Bradford?
Yep. Okay. And that kind of, you know, it again, didn't know at the time. It's like, what's an industrial building?
Right.
Office. Okay. I don't know what the differences are.
I don't even know what asset classes are here.
Yeah. What do you do with the dock door? You open it? Okay. But I kind of just fell into the industrial side just on accident, but it probably matched my personality more. Yeah. And I kind of lucked out in that way.
Yeah. No, I always say I'm glad I was an industrial. I was nowhere near pretty enough to be an office broker.
Me neither.
So.
Me neither.
They're always just so like pretty and perfect. It's funny. I said this before, but I did an office tenant rep deal one time, and I was like, wow, this is nice. They like have their flyers with all their information, and like, it's clean. There's not like needles or, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, one, and then you get paid like, wow, that fee's like triple what I make in industrial. Yeah. And by the way, everything's in the HVAC.
Yeah.
And can you imagine being that project leasing guy? You just sit in this 600,000 square foot skyscraper and you just walk, you know, just go up and down the elevator showing space. Like,
all day.
Boy, maybe I did mess this up.
Although long-term.
Long-term. Well, yeah. The last 3 years, like, okay, good decision. Good decision.
So, okay. So you're at Bradford doing industrial. Were you doing tenant rep, project leasing,
everything I could get my hands on.
Yep.
I mean, you know, when you feel like everyone used to just send you to Brook Hollow, mm-hmm. and that's just where everybody started.
Yep.
And, you know, you just out knocking on doors every now and then you get thrown on a listing, but it was mostly tenant rep. Mm-hmm. As I grew, you know, I was fortunate to get onto some, you know, good accounts from the leasing side, still maintain a lot of those. And, it ended up kind of being more 50-50. And here within the last couple of years, just by default, I've probably gone a little bit more to the landlord side.
Yep.
And it's just a function of time and sourcing some of these land deals that get turned into developments that you get to lease and every now and then sell some.
Right. Yeah. No, I think at some point in you do kind of everything career, at some point you do have to kind of drift to either, okay, I'm either doing project leasing or I'm doing tenant rep, because how many square feet of listings do you have now? Like, it's almost impossible for you to go tenant rep because
it requires a lot.
Yeah. You control a ton of square feet.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's always kind of fluctuates somewhere between 7 million to 10 million. Not that it's all available right now, but just what we kind of.
But something's always going on.
Yeah. Have our claws in and work the renewals and all the above.
Yeah. So I think at some point it does kind of take, you know, making that decision, like, you know, of what side of the house you're really going to play on. And, but if 100,000 foot tenant rep shows up, you're definitely going to work.
Yeah, I figured out.
That's what people are like. You still a broker? I'm like, not really, but I'll work renewals. And if they want a tour, it'll get passed off to a Mercer company guy. If it's big enough, I'll work on it.
I got it. I can still figure it out.
I can get out of bed for a 50,000 foot tenant rep or 100,000. Those are real deals now. I mean, think about when we started, like the cost of operating expenses now is what we used to lease buildings for on a gross basis.
Oh, yeah.
That's insane.
I mean, we've done, a client of mine went into 20,000 square feet, but it was a 10-year deal at airport rates. You know, I didn't really think about the fees, just, you know, I'm happy to still be working with them. And started figuring out the invoice, like, dang, that would have been one of my biggest fees a couple of years ago. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a client and a renewal, and I gave it to Harrison at Mercer Company, and we're going to work it together. And they actually want to move. So I was like, okay, you're going to have to go tour them. I don't have time for all this stuff. But I mean, they want to go do a 40. And I didn't even think about it, but Harrison's like, hey, this is a real fee now. And I was like, man, you're right. Like, I mean, we used to do a 5,000 foot deal, and like, honestly, a 10,000 foot deal is a real fee now.
It is.
Like, it's crazy to see the evolution. I mean, I think about buildings I sold in Brook Hollow in the teens.
Yep.
And like, if you see a building in Brook Hollow that has two digits on the per square foot price, you probably don't even have to see it. You could probably just buy it and be okay.
100%.
So, okay. So you're at Bradford 2004. How many years are you at Bradford?
Man, barely two.
Yeah.
It was, so 4 or 5. By the end of 5, that's when Trey and Ken started rolling with Lee. And so,
and they were at Bradford also at that time. Is that right?
Ken was. So he hired me. So okay. I started with him at Bradford, and then Trey was at NAI, what it used to be, Huff
Partners.
Or, yeah. Huff Bowles McDowell, whatever they were.
Or was it NAI Stoneley or Stanley?
Ah, that's it. NAI, something like that. There were a bunch of names. Yeah.
There's been a lot of iterations of NAI.
So it was kind of Trey, Conrad, and Grable from that shop.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, Ken, Greg from Bradford, and then Nathan from Heneas Miller at the time. So that was kind of the original seven that officially started, you know, that first part 2006.
Okay.
And been there ever since.
Yeah. No, I was telling Steven this the other day. I feel like Lee and Associates, I feel like y'all are a very similar to like a Mercer company. And like, I feel like guys go there and y'all have like a very good locker room type mentality with y'all's guys.
For sure.
That's my perception. I haven't, you know, ever worked there or anything. So, but I just kind of see, seems like all you guys kind of hang out together. Y'all do a lot of, you know, outside of, you know, so I think that's really cool that y'all have kind of created that culture there to, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just you work with these guys. I mean, you're friends with them.
Yeah.
Even the guys that, you know, Steven, Corbin, you know, Johnny, that we hired,
yeah,
you know, as the junior guys at one point in time. Well, I mean, now we're all, you know, kind of at the same level, and, yep, and we're friends.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So, okay. So y'all kick Lee off, and what was kind of the plan? Y'all got seven guys. Was it like, hey, do we want to grow this to a certain size, or is it just go make deals, man?
Man, I mean, I was still 2 years in the business. Yeah. I was still figuring out what direction was up.
Yeah.
So it worked out that I went that way. But yeah, at that time it was, you know, want to grow the company. But for me, it was just go out, find deals, make money. And let's see, how do I ultimately become a principal?
Yeah.
And that was where I was. I mean, again, 2 years out of college, you don't know anything.
Yeah.
Still.
Right.
Like 2007, wow, this is kind of great. And then it's like, I'm finally starting to figure it out. And then 2009 and 10, it's like, well, we just went back to 2004.
Yeah. Yep. That's when, and I started in 2010, and it was like they were giving industrial buildings away at that point. Like, hey, just move in it. Like, yep, we'll give you I saw deals that had a year of free rent just so that they wouldn't get their power ripped out of it.
Oh, yeah. I did one of those year. I don't remember if it was 10, but I remember thinking I did 21-year deals just because, you know, landlords were okay to kick the can and renew someone. Mm-hmm. Tenant reps, they didn't want to do any longer. No one knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
It was a bad year.
Man, you know, it's been interesting. So like back then, everybody would do those 1 year deals. Now everybody wants the longer term deals. And if you look at the escalation of rental rates, landlords should only do 1 year deals. Like, and then tenants should sign 10-year deals right now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you're going to be there, you might as well sign up for this, because I don't see it going that much backwards.
Yep.
Like, it really just can't. And so, but yeah, you're right. I mean, but like, I still think like, I mean, there was buildings we leased for 250 gross. OPEX now are north of 250 on just about every project, you know, and
I'll tell you, this is a funny story. So yeah, good friends with Rich Young Jr. And he was, I guess, going through some files in their office. And he goes, hey, I found this deal you did with my dad. And this is back in the day. It was a space over on Vantage. So in Carrollton off Beltline.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, am I reading this right? Year one was 99 cents, and then it bumped to $2.
Yeah.
And then it went to like 225. I said, yeah, I kind of remember those years where that was like the teaser, 99 cents year one. He goes, how did y'all make any money? I said, we didn't.
Yeah.
You had to do 100 deals a year, mm-hmm, to get all that up. He goes, God, why would anyone get in this business that I have no idea?
Yeah. No, I think I started in October of 2010, but I think, so my first full year, though, was 2011, and I think I did like 70 deals that year.
Yeah.
And I think I did like 190 gross.
Yeah.
Like.
I mean, talk about a dog fight.
Yeah.
I mean, just picking up scraps wherever you could.
Sure. Yeah. It, that's what it was. Right. And so it's funny. I love old Rich. You just got out of the cold plunge with Rich.
I went over to his house and did the cold plunge. I'm still cold. I have not warmed up yet. I should have gotten another cup of coffee. But yeah, he's real big into that. So I had to go try it.
Yeah.
And it kind of peps you up for the day.
That's what he had. Me and him went to breakfast one morning. He goes, I don't need coffee. I cold plunged this morning. I'm still on fire.
Yeah. Kind of jump out, give you a good caveman yell and go to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, what do you, we were kind of talking about this before we started, but like, what are you kind of seeing? You get to see a big landscape of the Dallas market with all your leasing. So I feel like you got a very good pulse on what things are doing. So what are you seeing now since we've had this interest rate adjustment and, but I still feel like there's tenant demand, but like, what do you see on your end?
So I'll kind of put it in the box that I play in mostly, which is infill, call it, 20 to 200,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Would love to be a big box guy and do some big, sexy million square footers, but that's not the sandbox I play in.
Yep.
So the world is softening a little bit.
Okay.
Every day, we have our reporting, we have our competitive sets. Every day there's more and more spaces coming on the market, handful of subleases. Demand is still there. I mean, we are still busy showing space. I will say the quality is kind of tough right now.
And the quality of tenant?
Quality of tenants.
Okay.
So the common theme, and this is just within the last 2 months, there are a ton of what were probably Chinese-based companies that are all just mass exiting China. So they're partnering with, people here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And they're big companies, and it's everything. I've toured five different Chinese-based cabinet manufacturers who are looking for their small distribution centers here.
Yep.
Some are moving their plants to Vietnam. Some are moving them to Mexico. There's some stone guys. There's a guy the other day, they literally make boxes for electronics, predominantly cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So they're legitimate companies, but they're new entities. So there's no credit.
Yep.
And we've been, it's been such a landlord market. It's like, we're not going to do those deals. We'll wait for somebody with credit. Well, the guys with credit, they're not making decisions this year for a lot of reasons. You got an election year, you do have, higher debt. And I never thought of that too. And I think, interest rates are up. I'm thinking going to buy buildings. You forget about
lines of credit.
Yep. So those guys are struggling a little bit. And rates are not going backwards. They've plateaued out, but they're not going backwards. So some guys who are getting their renewal, some of them are kind of tapped out. And it's, we could use more space, but we can't afford it. So we either got to get more racking, or they're going to move further out to find something a little cheaper. There was one that, I forget his name, over at Mercer, was representing in one of our buildings. And like, hey, man, where'd you end up moving your guys? He goes, yeah, that was a great story. They just found one of their buddies had some extra space in their warehouse, and they just moved in with him temporarily.
Yeah.
It's like that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So now is the time where you will see what I consider kind of the real estate landlords. There's a lot of ownerships now. The guys like the East Groups of the world, the Cabot, the Lean guys, they're real estate people. There's a lot of private equity that's smart people, but not really real estate.
Right.
So now is not the time to say, we're going to hold out for Fortune 500 and we want 5% increases. No, let's talk about this, especially if it's 20,000 square feet in a 1980s building.
Yep.
If it's a good business and there's some credit or we have credit enhancement, probably should look at that deal right now.
Yeah.
Keep your buildings full because there is a lot coming on the market.
Yeah. No, that's pretty good perspective. I feel like over the past couple of years, the tenant rep has not had a lot of power.
It's been a lot more fun on the landlord side.
I don't know that a lot of power has completely shifted or anything, but I do feel like you can kind of dig your heels in on a couple of things a little more now.
For sure.
And within reason. I say that lightly because the hard part is for people coming off of 5-year renewals right now that did a deal at 550 net, it's probably double, you know? And so there's a lot of coaching, a lot of, I mean, it's tough because you want to provide value to your client, but at the end of the day, it's like, hey man, here's the list of other options. They might be more expensive than $10 a foot, you know? And you got to move, right? So yeah, I don't think a lot of people are going to be moving around. I do think, you know, I've made some renewals lately on some of our assets where I'm like, hey, I know there's a line, you know, that I got to be at. Maybe I go a little underneath it, but I don't have any vacancy and I baked in vacancy, right? Yeah. So I'm actually winning, you know? And so on the, you know, on the next, you know, and this is a 5-year plus hold. So on the next couple of years, like who cares? You know, well, it'll all even out and get back up there. So I agree with you. The people that just, you know, that stick to their spreadsheet could kind of get waxed.
Well, and that's it. And you have, you know, again, some of the, you know, ownerships, and you talk about the big guys, Prologis, First Industrial, who have owned these assets forever. Basis is lower. You know, let's say market's $10, mm-hmm. but you're coming off a $5 net rent.
Yeah.
They're still winning at $9.50. They right. don't have to hit $10.
Right.
So they can be just a hair under what is the perceived market, and they're still killing it.
Yeah.
And they, and those decisions are, you know, probably being made.
It's so do you see, you know, you're in that 20 to 200,000 foot. It seems like the inventory is really high, and I call it like 500,000 and up. It seems like those bigger bomber spaces are there, but do you feel like there's a lot of inventory though still in the 20 to 200 space, or maybe like the 100 and up space? And
there are. Well, are you saying 100 to 200 or the 500 plus?
I said what I'm saying is I feel like from what I hear, I don't track a ton of it, but like 500 and up seems like there's a kind of a glutton of space like that.
Well,
out there
is, but I mean, you know, you lease 3 million square footers, it moves the needle, right?
Yeah.
And I think those, I mean, South Dallas, everyone always talks about it. You know, it kind of has moments of activity, and then everyone just gets terrified to invest further down there. This last cycle, you know, people just kept going further and further out.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it was my money and I had it tied up in Mansfield, Forney, you know, some of those places that are way out, I'd be a little nervous right now. And that is where a lot of that vacancy, you know, that's where a lot of it is.
Yeah.
So I think there is now, I'm, you know, visiting with colleagues who play a little bit more in that realm. There's been quite a bit of activity here lately. There's been some big deals done in South Dallas. There's, I think, two that maybe are going to get done out by Alliance. So what's weird, and again, it comes in waves, just like everything. You know, they're seeing the same thing we are, where it's kind of slowed down, less than 200,000 square feet, but there's a handful of 500 plus deals that are active, making and people chasing. So it's kind of a weird dynamic.
Are you seeing any of the developers maybe consider selling to users on some of these deals now? Is that
I think the ones that are out in the tertiary markets, for sure.
Yeah.
It's where we're. Some are always, we will sell. There's a few that have formally put them on the market for sale.
Yeah.
You know, that project up in Denton that the Velocis guys did with KBC or KBS, mm-hmm. KBC, I always mess that up. You know, that just traded to Exeter. So that was four empty buildings, 800,000 square foot plus, that they just took down.
And this was in Denton?
It was in Denton.
And so Denton kind of got real hot in very overbuilt, it seems like. The vacancy is pretty high up there.
In the process of overbuilding, yes.
Yeah.
Now, with that said, I mean, and yes, it is. Everyone kind of jumped in there. But again, like that, I mean, there's 800,000 square feet right there. Mm-hmm. And that there's two or three projects that are kind of off the beaten path a little bit.
Yep.
The stuff that's right there on 35, and we have some assets up there too. Activity is actually still pretty decent. And for a while, some of those first couple deals that were done in the urban logistics guys building, I mean, those rates were higher than some of the McKinney rates. So everyone just kind of, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah.
There is demand. But I think, you know, you do have that big box market up there, but that shallow bay, there's only a handful of those assets that kind of can accommodate that. And it's still pretty active up there.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. Yeah, there's probably too many projects right now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, everyone's kind of already gobbled up the primo sites. So Denton will continue to grow, but it's just getting further and further north because really most of the, what I'll say, the arguably better sites are all kind of spoken for.
Yeah.
And same thing over in McKinney. You know, it's, everyone thought that was getting overbuilt. I mean, shoot, there were 9 deals done in the last, I'll say 90 days, kind of right before the holidays. I mean, everyone who threw up a building either has their projects completely leased or, you know, getting close to wrapping it up. So it all was getting absorbed. And now there's no additional land unless you really want to go further out. So, I mean, that was kind of a great little play for those guys who got mm-hmm. in at that time.
Yep. Now, we were chasing a big deal in Denton, a metal deal, you know, it was about over 1 million feet, and
well aware of it.
And you know, it's funny, we got some market leasing assumptions and then they got revised and it revised our offer. And they're right. Like, hey, best and final. I was like, less?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not even gonna submit this, but it I mean, the big question I kept getting from my equity was like, man, there's I know it's not the same product as that big tilt wall up there, but you know, do those guys drop and start beating you on rate to get buildings filled? And I'm like,
I don't know if they can.
Yeah.
Might not be able to. I mean, really, that's probably with that project going to a new ownership who don't right. know what they underwrote. I mean, we had a dog in that fight too. But that project trading from the current seller mm-hmm. will do nothing but just continue to lift up Denton.
Right.
Because now you don't have, what are market rents? Let's say it's $9. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the metal buildings are still at $5 gross.
Yeah.
I mean, they're always full because they're cheap, but right. just having someone who will go and push those rates up to market will do nothing but help that submarket.
Yeah. And then you work on that big ML project. How much in McKinney, how many square feet did ML build in McKinney?
With the last building, I guess we're a little over 400,000 square feet.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that first phase leased like hotcakes. And then they built that 170 that had some trailer parking at the back. Mm-hmm. And it leased pretty quick too. Our East Group project that was over off 121 right across from the stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, got a couple pre-leased. I mean, that it's kind of apples and oranges because that's higher finish, but just at Main and Main.
Yeah.
So people who wanted visibility, you know, that we were kind of the only game in town.
Yeah. When we chase the BNC buildings in McKinney, we try to get comps and there's just not a lot of them. It's like,
there are now.
Trust us. Trust yeah. us. This is worth it. Like,
well, you know, before we got on, you know, I was visiting where I guess I was just, you know, terrible at presenting the idea, but you know, there was demand in McKinney. And I'm this is probably going back maybe 7 years now. It was at least like 2 kids ago. but, you know, you own
time things.
I mean, it is. It's just, you just lose time, just flies by. But there was really only one building, I think maybe TIG built back in the day, that was kind of a institutional dock high building. Mm-hmm. That was it. Everything else was metal or user owned. There was nothing. Now, the tenant base wasn't real deep up there, but everything was going that way. I mean, you know, it was hard to get institutional guys to Allen. Well, then they kind of started building it out and there wasn't much left. Like, guys, there's still some land up here right around, you know, the pocket. And McKinney is great with industrial as long as you're over here on this side. They're not going to let you go take another, you know, an office site or a home site and make it industrial. But as long as you're over there on the east side of 75, you know, they're happy to work with you and just cannot get anyone's like, oh, man, it's just so far up there. Mm-hmm. It's like, I agree with you, but all the folks moving here from California, they're not moving into Highland Park or, you know, over here by the airport, they're all going north. It's McKinney, it's Prosper, it's Frisco, it's Salina. And so just, you know, population growth, this is happening.
Yeah.
And you can still buy dirt for $3, $4.
So to your point, I live in Prosper. I got this office here because it made sense logistically for everybody. And it seemed pretty close for me at the time. It was a 25-minute drive to the office.
Yep.
It's now a 40-minute drive.
That is,
I've been in here a year.
That's not fun.
No. We will only continue to move further north. Sorry, right. everybody.
Well, but that's it. And so, you know, it's what's crazy is it took two, you know, guys from Houston to throw up some buildings. They leased. And even at that time, I was telling people, like, hey, you know, you drive through McKinney, you see these big names. You see Train. You see Goodman. I mean, you see national credit tenants up there. that are in grade level metal buildings. And at that time, they were already paying $6 or $6.50. And so at that time, you could underwrite a new tilt wall building, and all you had to get was maybe $7, $7.50. It's like,
that sounds,
for a more efficient building,
yeah,
I guarantee you can get these guys to pay an extra 50 cents to move into a dock high building.
You know, it's funny you say that. I don't know if you've ever been to Midland and driven around their industrial.
I've been to Midland. I have not driven around their industrial.
I looked it up on CoStar. There's like three buildings that actually have dock high. And we have a big JV partner out of Midland, and I was like, but they redline Midland, and we can't buy in Midland. So it's fine. I don't really buy there. But I said, listen, I don't develop, but if I did, I would develop a dock high distribution building in Midland. Because when I was driving around, I saw multiple Brook Hollow tenants,
yep,
that had a location there in a grade level shop type space, because that's all they could get.
Yeah. And it's the same thesis. You, yeah, see them, you know, they're unloading that 18-wheeler out in the parking lot, yeah, with a forklift and running it inside.
Yeah. So if I ever develop Midland, dock high.
Well, if I ever figure out how to build a building, I'll take your idea. I have no red, you know, red flags there.
So, all right. Well, what was the worst cold call you ever made, or the most awkward one?
There were probably a handful. The one that always sticks out in my mind, I've told, you know, some of the younger guys who work at our office. I don't know if you represent this tenant or your brother did, but we just call him the rag guy. He was there in Commerce Center.
Oh, he's Inwood Trade Center.
And then y'all moved him to Inwood Trade Center.
Yeah.
So that was when I leased Commerce
Center. Grant Winscore.
I don't.
Is that his name?
I don't remember his name.
He's smoking cigarettes in there all day long?
Everyone smokes cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
That's part of my cold calling. I go smoke cigarettes with them cold calling. But yeah, so when they moved from Commerce Center to Inwood, I don't know if it was that guy or just one of the employees, I had to go drop off a key or something, because that wasn't necessarily a cold call, but maybe it was following up to say, you know, what all, you know, hey, you guys, y'all good? You got what you need? Yeah. And it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, a lot of those warehouses are kind of shutting down. And I just opened the door, walked in, and one of the guys, his face was just on the front table. I guess just seeing what the table smelled like. I don't know. And he, like, you know, stood up, just red-eyed. It was kind of awkward. I was staring at him. He started brushing stuff off the table. And I looked over at the ashtray, and there was something other than a cigarette burning there. I'm like, man, it's like party time at 3 o'clock. The rag guy. And then it got real awkward, because he was like, hey, yeah, so you're the guy who we used to lease from. I'm like, yeah, I was just dropping off a key. Like, I just really would like to get the hell out of here. And goes, well, so can I ask you some questions? Like, yeah. And then it was just awkward to where I busted him. I wanted out of there. And it's like, you know, you just send me an email if there's anything else I can do for you guys. Yeah. And there were a handful of other calls where you never knew what you're going to really walk into on, yeah, some of those places. And what's funny is, when I first started, it's just like everyone else, you make your 100 calls a week. Yeah. I had it on a spreadsheet. It was kind of documented. Then I'd probably go through it with Ken on Fridays. Like, you know, who are you out there calling on? And I'd have, yeah, notes. I found that sheet 6-7 years, just, you know, I wasn't doing that as documented anymore. And just reading through my comments, I should have written a book. It was hysterical. It's kind of like, you know, called on someone on Sovereign Row. Dog met me at the gate, could not get through, had to get back in car.
Yeah.
It's like, talk to this guy, had a gun sitting on the table.
Yep.
Didn't feel comfortable, walked back out. I mean, just all the stuff that, yeah, you talk about office brokers, I don't think they experience.
No.
Just the unknown that you walk into when you go in these buildings. And one of the first year as well, I was, you didn't have as much on your phone. You had a MapsGo. So
right.
I'm learning the area. I was in Brook Hall, and I forget if it was Chancellor Row or one of those. You know, some of those intersections, they don't all have stop signs. They should, but they don't.
Yeah.
And I kind of rolled through, I'm pretty sure it was Chancellor Row, and I looked out my window, and I just got T-boned by an 18-wheeler.
Oof.
That was like first.
They're coming down that road.
They are. And it was 100% my fault. Yeah. But, you know, I'm just out there trying to make cold calls, figure out where I am, who I'm hitting next. Rolled out in front and just got smacked by, oof, an 18-wheeler. Luckily, I saw the engine in my window and tried to hit the gas, so he clipped me on the back, but he's still just, oh man, that was a bad day. Welcome to industrial real estate.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about your database, like, because you know, I've since handed off my database at Mercer Company, but every now and then I'll get like a text of my history.
Yeah.
It's like, this guy's a total asshole.
Oh yeah. Calling him again on Monday, yeah. But only just to be a jerk back to him.
Just totally, you know.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, cool. Well, so you've had a very successful brokerage career. What's kind of the things you do on the regular that you think kind of just have made you successful and helped you win?
You know,
besides your new habit of cold plunging.
Yeah. Besides just getting again still cold. Yeah. Should have worn a long sleeve shirt.
Yeah.
You know, I think what I did early on has, you know, contributed to my success. Which, you know, again, this is prior to kids, prior to having, you know, a lot more on my plate than I used to. I mean, it was 100% just work ethic.
Yeah.
It was getting in early, staying late. And, you know, I'd like to say a lot of, you know, my business snowballed, which it did. But man, early on, half those tenants I represent, they're all out of business. I was hoping for a little bit more snowball.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, it purely was work ethic and just making as many calls as possible. You know, we still, and I this is not, you know, full of it, but every now and then I do still make some cold calls, but it is nothing to what it used to be. You don't have the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the relationships and being out, being visible. I mean, I had a construction guy who called and goes, hey, you kind of work over, you know, the Carrollton Valwood area. I do. Well, we have a sister company that needs a fabrication building.
Yeah.
So you still have to be out, be visible, have breakfasts, have lunch with people, and business kind of starts coming into you.
Yeah.
One of my clients who we did a big deal with out by the airport, they're from California. They have a friend who is looking to buy a building here in Dallas and move their operation here.
Yeah.
Hey, can you help them? So it's kind of a different, it's still kind of cold calling, but in a different way. You're just checking in with the people you already know.
Yeah.
And it just continues to kind of fan out from there.
Yep. What about books? Are there any books you like that you've read, or do you read books, or no?
You know,
it's kind of a 50-50 with brokers. Some of them read all the time, some of them don't read at all.
I don't think I have the time to read all the time. it's funny, the older I've gotten, I actually do enjoy it. But the only real time I get to read is either in a deer blind or on a flight.
Yep.
I mean, coming home, it sounds great instead of watching TV just to read something, but I'm so drained.
Yeah.
And I usually, by the time I hit the pillow, I'm out in 10 minutes.
Me too.
I take a lot of naps too. I mean, I can fall asleep anywhere.
That's funny. I can too.
Yeah. I just, you know, I it doesn't matter. I mean, even if people are talking in the background, like, I just need 5 minutes here. All that being said, when I do have the opportunity to read, I do enjoy history.
Okay.
So there is a book written by Glenn Beck called Miracles and Massacres. It's really not as bad as it sounds, but it's 7 or 8 short stories that's all history-based, all just people that you've really never heard of that, you know, contributed to the outcome of everything from the Revolutionary War all the way through Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
But they're only 20 to 30 pages long.
Oh, that's cool.
So when you're kind of ADD like me or just don't have a lot of time to read.
Right.
You can kind of get through a story and like, okay, that was kind of cool. And then it kind of goes on.
Yeah.
And it breaks it up. So that was a good one. And then Battle of New Orleans was a good one about Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, you always kind of, you know, you go to a party in New Orleans, like, why is there a statue of Andrew Jackson here? Like,
yeah.
That's kind of weird. Well, then you read the story about, you know, how he lucked out and won something mm-hmm. he really wasn't supposed to.
Yeah.
Gauge the help of pirates. Like, I had no idea that's really what happened down there. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really enjoy reading history when I have the time and availability to do so.
You know, it's cool. I know that statue in front of that church and all that stuff. And I don't know the story. So that's cool. And when we were over on spring break, like me and my family, we went to the Alamo and like, I've been to the Alamo. I know the Alamo, but like to like, we had got a guided tour and to like really go through it again. Like now at this age is like, oh man, that's kind of badass. These guys were just like, we're dying on this hill, you know?
Well, and I think that's why I'm attracted to history, because you just kind of were like, you know, if I was around at that time, mm-hmm. would I have been one of those guys? Or have I just been like hiding under the table somewhere? I'm not sure. I would like to think, but I mean, you know, and there's still present day stories that are similar to that, but just not quite as, not like that. And I'll tell you one more that I thought was pretty interesting. It's called The Big Rich. Mm-hmm. And it's about, you know, the four, I'll say kind of predominant, you know, oil and gas families in Texas.
Yeah.
And I forget which one it was, but again, this is, you know, early 1900s, you know, old, multiple, but I guess kind of the original oil boom down there by Beaumont, all the players in it. And there was one story, and I'm not in the oil and gas business, so I don't know all the ins and outs, but I guess if you have a lease, it works until that expiration, but you can go past that expiration as long as you, you know, have a hole in the ground. If you didn't drill, you lose it. And there was some story where they had not drilled yet, equipment broke, they're about to lose the lease, and they went out and got, you know, all the hands on site and manually like twisted the drill into the ground to like, you know, be able to hang on to their lease. I mean, it's just crazy stories like that that are just true entrepreneurial, just hard ass people who ended up, you know, being ridiculously successful.
Yeah.
So again, it's just kind of one of those, it's some of those are kind of motivating and some just, man, put yourself back in that time frame. Which direction would you have gone?
Right. Yeah. No, it's I always say, like, what is it? You know, you see pictures of people from the early 1900s or whatever, like none of them are smiling.
No.
Because life was hard.
Yeah,
back
it
then.
Was hard. The camera took a little bit longer to take your picture. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, well, what's something about you that not most people know? Like something unique or interesting about you?
You know, I think I'm a pretty open book, so there's probably not a time. I think, I guess this would be kind of, you know, once upon a time, this is high school, you know, I really did enjoy art. I was halfway kind of good at it. I enjoy going to museums. I enjoy photography. And I think if I had enough money not to work, I would love to kind of get back into photography.
Yeah.
I would love to be able to go sit out in the country somewhere and paint, do something similar to that, which that probably is something unique that not many people know, but it's also because I don't have time to do any of that right now.
So that's cool.
No one ever knows. But yeah, I mean, that's, I did kind of have that creative side of me, which and really has played into, you know, even what I do from a broker standpoint, trying to be, I'm much more, more creative than I am good with numbers.
Yeah.
I can like, hey, you know, maybe if we take this land, but you know, I know there's a building over here, but we could actually demo that and this actually would work for what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's always been kind of my strong suit. Mm-hmm. More than the financial analysis side of it just is so boring to me. Part of the puzzle, but the creative side is I think where I kind of excel. And that kind of comes from just the, you know, the love of, you know, kind of the arts.
Yeah. No, that's a lot of my background too, man. Like music was started that at 5 years old and that's something I still continue to do today. And it's just that whole other side of the brain that, you know, I think that's probably helped me as well in real estate, put some creative transactions together.
That is the other thing. At some point in my life, I want to try to learn to play guitar.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any musical talent in my bones. That is just not, I have short, stubby fingers. Like it's just, I don't think it's going to work, but I would love to just give it a go at some point in my life.
Yep. You just got to start, man.
That's right.
There's always, you know, it's funny. I just started doing with my son. I started doing jujitsu about 4 months ago with him.
Oh, so yeah.
That's totally different. You know, that's like playing chess with your body. And so that's, but it's a lot of mental game, you know,
right.
And it's, that's been a lot of fun just learning, you know, that's kind of where, you know, we're kind of at the point in our career where it's like, man, I kind of want to like learn some new things in life, you know, before I'm too old to like do anything.
And you do. So, and it gives you a balance of life too. It's just, it's hard to force yourself to do that when it's, man, I got 3 young kids, got to pay for school.
Yeah.
Not even in the college years yet. That's coming. That's generally at the front of your mind is just paying some bills and getting everything set up for later in life.
Yep. No, that's where it's at, man. You got to find time for yourself though at some point.
That's true.
You got to find it. Otherwise you'll just kind of drive yourself crazy.
That's very true.
Well, cool, man. Well, I really appreciate you being on. That's a great story. You know, we'll love to have you on again because you see so much of a market that a lot of us don't get to see. And so that's great to hear your perspective and, you know, love working deals with you, and we're working a deal right we now. Are. And so, but yeah, man, it's great hearing your story. I'm sure, this podcast has been fun because I just get a lot of brokers that listen to it now. They're like, hey man, I listened to that one. You know, we don't have a huge audience, but we have the right audience. And so
it's
cool, man. So I think this will be a great episode for everybody and a lot of the younger guys to hear, the very top tier guy in the Dallas Fort Worth market. I think Dallas Fort Worth is the NFL of commercial real estate. So,
100%.
So, well, thanks, Adam.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
Love to do it again.
Awesome. Thank you.
See ya.